Or S&P futures up 54 and Nasdaq futures up 255. We're celebrating the Fed decision yesterday. We're celebrating everything. We're celebrating Elon Musk call to arms. By the way, are we alleging that Lou's mama was in prison?
I want that intro every time I come on.
That's a good one, isn't it?
It is. It's brilliant. First of all, let me just say congratulations to the Chicago Cubs. I think the worst team in baseball here in Denver. So I'm gonna take the Cubs for my cheering and rooting interest.
You usurped that spot from the White Sox.
Yeah, I know. And you know, the contrast between the organizations could not be any more different. But regardless, congrats to the Cubs. Back in the playoffs for first time in 5 years, and I'm going to be thrilled to watch because
if they maintain the top wild card, then they get two or three games at home, which I'm sure Ricketts is happy to have. And
are they playing San Diego? Is that the
right now? That is correct, gentlemen.
They
have a three game series with the Mets. The Mets could, but probably won't. They're four back of San Diego and nine back of the Cubs.
The deal is the three winning teams. There's three divisions. So there's three winners and three wild card. The crummiest winner plays the crummiest wild card, and the other two wild cards, the two best ones, play each other. And the best one of those two gets to host the series, and you don't go back and forth. It's just a two out of three series in one guy's place.
Could the Cubs end up playing the Dodgers?
No, they would. Actually, they probably would play the Dodgers. No, they get to play the Dodgers play the crummiest wild card.
Okay.
So the Cubs will play the.
The Phillies do. The Phillies are the number one team.
The Brewers. I think the Brewers are
the Brewers and the Phillies
right
get a bye.
Yeah, they the first get a round. Bye.
Yeah, so they get a bye because it's the two wild cards and then or three wild cards and then the lowest division.
Yeah, so the Dodgers will play the crummiest wild card, and the Cubs will play the team right behind them, which right now would be San Diego, right, Jimmy?
That is correct.
So there. And we hope it's over before Christmas, so we're not snowed out.
And the Dodgers will be that National League West division winner. So the Cubs can't supplant them. So okay.
Well, they can't supplant them because they can't catch the Brewers. Brewers got the best record.
That's what I mean. Yeah. They can't move them out of there.
The question is, the Dodgers. Could they weaken and lose the wild card thing? Who would they be playing, Jimmy? The Mets?
Yes. Right now, the three wild cards are the Cubs, Padres, Mets.
Well, the Mets have some pitching. I don't think you want them in a short series. You want any of these teams. Actually, the Cubs probably are the weakest team in a short series. They don't have the two huge pitchers like some of these guys do. That doesn't mean they won't win, but...
No, well, they're going to have to hit then, right?
Yeah. Which they sometimes do, sometimes don't.
That's good news. It's good news for a number of my friends, especially one of my former partners that I practiced with, who is probably the most diehard Cubs fan I've ever been around. And she's I hope she's celebrating today.
Well, so I think it would be a lot better if they got the games here. Plus, Jimmy gets two tickets, two games, so that'd be nice.
I get games one and two for the wild card. If they go further, one and two. If they go further again, one and two. And then if they go to the World Series, I get two and three, according to my group who has a season ticket type deal.
Super.
I still don't think that's right. I don't see how they're going to... You're guaranteed two games for the wild card, but I don't see how they steal a rubber game for you. Who gets your tickets?
Well, like I said, our package is the weekday and weekend, weeknight games and weekday and weekend games. So I'm not sure how it works. I just go by what our leader tells us how the Cubs want it.
I think what he told you is you're guaranteed two games.
Well, he said games one and two. He goes by what they send him. He gets an email. They wanted money up front. If they don't go further, the money will be used for next year's
tickets. You're not getting it back.
Yeah. Okay. How many guys in the consortium?
Three.
Okay.
Kevin just reminds us that the Dodgers could definitely be caught by the Padres. They're only two games behind.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be an interesting. And does Chicago have a better record than L.A.?
Actually, yes, they
do. I think
they
do, yeah.
Yeah, so
it doesn't matter if you win the division, you're still.
If you win the division, you're still matched up against the worst playoff team, or worst wild card team. But okay,
the choreography of this whole thing is, we had upper deck seats. So when the Cubs went the first time, we were first row. We were not, even though I thought they were like the best seats in the place, we were never moved. But the choreography of the people downstairs, every series you go, more and more people from Major League, the poobahs or the cool guys, whatever you want to call them, they all of a sudden start to get seats, so they start moving people. So maybe somebody's moving into your seat the third game, Jimmy. That could very well be.
That's really interesting.
Oh yeah, they move. I mean, by the time you get to the World Series, I think, Jimmy, look this up. I think Major League Baseball gets 5,000 or 6,000 seats or something. For other owners and hangers-on and advertisers and you name it. So you end up getting moved.
Well, yeah, my understanding is, and this is from a friend of mine who used to own the Milwaukee Braves, that every owner gets a seat, like, to the World Series. All the owners get a ticket tickets to the World Series game. So, yes, Major League Baseball does have a block of tickets that are going to be given away, obviously to the foreign to the press, dignitaries, and owners.
Distinguished attorneys.
Exactly.
Guys like Luke.
Bribe pairs. That's interesting because of course the baseball parks, and I think that's one of the reasons the NFL goes to a neutral site with the Super Bowl. The baseball parks don't hold nearly as many people as the football stadiums do, and those tickets have every bit of the demand that a Super Bowl does. So pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, Bill Murphy, my buddy Bill, his daughter was at the last weekend of the tennis thing. That's still a hot ticket the last week, isn't it?
The U.S. Open.
You have to have those tickets for like centuries, don't you? To be you have those things.
Yeah, and that. But what's center court hold at? What is it, Flushing Meadows? What does center court 20, hold 000. There?
20. It's not, that much.
It's not that much.
It was way more than I thought it was, but
that is. Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that.
I would have guessed eight or something.
Yeah, eight or nine max. But well, anyway, I'm. That was when the Vikings were playing in the Super Bowl. They had that Super Bowl run in the 70s. It was really interesting listening to my parents talk about their very limited ticket allotment. And my father I think my father held back. I can't remember how many tickets the coaches got. Not very many, but those things were. Gold.
I don't know if any of us can answer this question, but. If you've got one of the good skyboxes, do you get your skybox, or are they,
No.
You always see the cool guys in the skyboxes. I mean, do you?
Not for Super Bowls. A Super Bowl event is, or it, the Super Bowl, at least on the stadiums that I'm familiar with, that event is like a rock concert. Your season tickets don't encompass that unless you buy some kind of special, very special package, because the value of those skyboxes, if a Super Bowl is coming to that stadium, they're 10 times what you would normally rent the box for.
Well, the Dallas, when I took the tour of Dallas, this is a while ago, long before COVID, the deal there was, it's your box. Now, of course, I think there's probably a rider for a Super Bowl, but it's your box. But if you want to use it, some of the boxes, we were in one that held, 25 people. It's huge. It was along, yeah, around the corner. I mean, some of them are 15 or 12, but then there's some that are. But if you wanted to come to a tractor pull or something, you could use your box. But I couldn't just bring you two guys and go sit in our box. I had to buy all 25 tickets.
Correct.
So I couldn't just buy 10 tickets and go, even though nobody else could sit in my box. For me to sit in my box, I needed all the tickets, which is I couldn't understand that for a second. Other than I guess they get away with it, because what makes you think you want to go to a concert? Why do you have to get 20 friggin' people to go with you? I guess you don't. You got to buy the tickets, huh?
Well, it's, I mean, from their perspective, it's my understanding is it was a logistics support issue. They have to staff their cooking facilities and serving facilities and everything. If you're using the box, and it's not efficient for them to do it for just, three ticket or four ticket sales or 10 ticket sales out of 25.
Well, they don't necessarily have to. Did I ever tell you my story in the skybox at Wrigley? We had a guy who traded for me, or for us. A good friend of mine from the South Side, good guy. But he ended up working for, I can't tell you, maybe Jimmy can, the six. Was a Ticketron. They got taken over by Ticketmaster. They got taken over by somebody and somebody. But every time along the way, he was a survivor. He was like the controller. But they had a box at Wrigley. So every once in a while, if nobody's using the box. Now, normally, if it's your box, you can buy a bottle of vodka or something and just lock it in the
yeah,
cabinet.
Nobody else. You have a private locker.
But this was like a regular, this is a long time ago. This is a regular, just a regular open box where you got to go, buy your own crap, basically. And the deal was, now just to show you how long ago it was, you had to pay the same amount for beers and dogs and stuff that you did in the rest of the stadium. Now, some people might say, well, that's fair. Why should the cool guys get a break? But, Lou, it's such a different deal. I go up there, and there's like five or six of us. So I order a case of beer and a thing of hot dogs. Well, beer in the stadium at the time is $5. So the guy hands me a case of Miller Lite, and he goes, that'll be $120. It's going to be what? At the time, it was probably $15 or $10 at the local supermarket.
Yeah.
And he goes, by the way, here's your hot dogs. They were like, 50 or something for 12 dogs and buns and some mustard. And I go, aren't you going to put it in the steamer or, put the beers in the fridge? Nah, that's your job. I just paid $170 for a case of beer and a thing of hot dogs, right? But the best is, long about the seventh inning, somebody else must have gotten wind that the box was empty. Some guy shows up with his girlfriend, real high looking babe, not that I remember, and I think I know why they were there. And we were like, they realized we weren't leaving till the end of the game, so they were there about a minute and a half and left. I think they were there to do the mile high, maybe 50 feet up, and not a mile
trying
high.
Trying to hit a home run.
Yeah, they were there to do something, but we were in the middle of that. We were the, where they say coitus interruptus kind of thing. But
it's where was it? Toronto, right? That couple.
Well, they were in a hotel.
Yeah, they didn't have.
Yeah, that's
the,
right.
Curtains drawn.
Right. Yeah, the curtains pulled back in the whole stadium. And, of course, I think the woman said later, I didn't realize people could actually see in there.
Oh, my God. Of course, they probably had the lights.
You
ever been to that place?
Yeah. When you do it in front of the window, it's whether the curtains are drawn or not, it's pretty obvious.
That place is so different than, the Phoenix enclosed place. Although Toronto one opens, right? Or does it? I'm not sure. I think it does.
I think it does, yeah.
But the place, the Phoenix one is, I mean, when you get to the concession thing, you're bucking up against the wall. I mean, the place is just as big as they need. The thing in Toronto, I went there one day for lunch. We were up there for a conference. If they take the walls down, the thing is way bigger than the baseball field. The thing's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be, 30% more than the field? They had the basketball team played up there before they got a stadium. That's how long ago this was. I was still doing stuff for the SIBO. Well, they played basketball there. They had the basketball court right along the first baseline. and put temporary seats around it. God, it looked like a postage stamp on that field.
Yeah, I was going to say you need binoculars to.
They only use those seats. Then they put temporary seats around the other three sides of the basketball court. So it looked like, you know, they only used the actual seating for one side. Sort of like they did it when they used to have the Bears at Soldier Field. They put the temporary seats in the outfield, right, on the other side. So
yeah, okay.
Lou, what'd you make of the Fed thing yesterday? What'd you think about Elon Musk? Where did that come from? Out of that guy's, isn't it? Don't you feel good we gave him $1 trillion? He's nuts.
Which Musk? Which Musk? This quote is, are we talking about?
The one where we need to get armed. We're going to fight the war, and there's not enough white people. And what is he talking about?
Oh, well, he's a eugenics guy, and so. Yeah, you know, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. I think he watched the movie Idiocracy, and it really scared him. So you know, we don't have enough smart people. We don't have enough competent people. The upper classes are not having children. We need to. We're looking at a population. You know, huge population decline, and. You know, the people that are going to be left are going to be idiots, and we're sort of breeding ourselves into stupidity and extinction. And I mean, that's just sort of his worldview, and it has been for a while, I think.
Well, so. This is in addition on calling on his followers to fight. Musk has demanded the imprisonment of rapper Bobby Villain, wherever he is, for insulting Kirk after his death, calling upon fellow tech executives to deplatform or fire other critics of Kirk, and accused the media and educational institutions of programming people to murder, all part of a dark turn in Musk's language since Kirk was shot. Responding,
it's not like he doesn't have any evidence of this. So I get.
Well, who's this guy? This Stephen Miller in the White House? Where did he come from? What is his story? The White House Deputy Chief of Staff Steele and Miller vowed vengeance Monday in Musk, but the whole idea is. Musk is calling people to, violence is coming, and called for the arming of people, the right people, and there's not enough white people, and what the hell's going on here?
Well, Musk's remarks are in direct response to the stuff that was coming out with this assassin of Kirk and the swirl of Antifa, Trantifa. Revolutionary talk that permeates the world that this guy, the shooter, sort of lived in.
What world did he live in? I don't know anything about Discord. I mean, he supposedly was like the. How do you decode somebody like this as being liberal or a follower of some other part of the. Of the right, or how does anybody even know? The kid hasn't talked. He's an idiot. What do we?
Well, he's expressed himself in a number of different ways with sort of aligning himself with, at least in his expressions, aligning himself with this violent wing of the Antifa. And I mean, it's not a violent wing. Antifa is a violent, you know.
Are they in that
quasi-anarchic?
They're in the Discord group. Is it? What is it? Discord?
Well,
thing?
Discord is a gaming, a gaming message board, super gaming message board, and it's inhabited by a lot of extreme people who frankly are calling for murdering people they don't like. And Kirk was one of them. I can name five or six guys who have been opposed to things like DEI and trans rights agenda. You know, men in women's sports, men having access to women's bathrooms, prisons, facilities.
Well, I think that a lot of people, me included, are against that, but I still don't get this. Why? But this whole attack constantly on gays. When are we going to stop that? I mean, people are gay.
I'm not seeing an attack on the homosexual movement. This is something else.
Okay.
In fact, if you follow the the evolution of the whole trans rights movement, it's actually fairly inimical to homosexuality and gay rights, because the trans movement immediately, if you have, for example, a guy who's effeminate, a male child who's effeminate, the trans rights movement says that child should be identified immediately, put on puberty blockers, and subjected to surgery if they want to do it.
That's a little extreme.
But that's what I mean. It literally is an anti-homosexual kind of orientation. They don't really believe that homosexuality is a class. They believe that people who have these kinds of feelings toward members of the same sex are in fact actually members of the same sex, and that there should be steps taken.
That's an interesting call for somebody else. For you, I guess you can call for trying to do that to somebody else. It's pretty interesting.
And that's the issue. And so again, I'm talking about the extreme elements of this movement. But
how do people, no matter what it is, how does somebody get that extreme?
I'm just talking in general.
So
a lot of it is mental illness, and it takes root in a this kind of virulence takes root in mental illness. A lot of it is this. I'm trying to remember this whole social contagion phenomena, where you get somebody who is, for example, feeling out of sorts, out of place. I don't really know my role in the world. You know, why is my body doing these weird things? And then you come on them. They come on one of these chat rooms or in Discord or on Facebook or some other aspect of social media, where there are a bunch of people, adults, telling them, "Hey, look, we can give you the answers to why you're feeling bad, and it's this. You know, it's the, you're in the wrong body, you're the wrong gender, you're the wrong sex. Come talk to us, and we'll convert you." And then, you know, it's an extreme victim mentality that latches in, and I mean the violent elements there are have been there for a while, and this is the Kirk murder is just the latest in a string of several of these episodes. I mean, you had an attack by a group of these people on federal officers in Texas, you had another group that were engaged in multiple murders up in the Northeast. You know, all associated with this trans or Antifa connection, and they've, in some cases, like the Salt Lake City group that this kid was, the Kirk shooter was apparently affiliated with, they've aligned themselves with Palestinian liberation elements, which have their own violent underpinnings, and so to a lot of people who are looking at this, we're seeing an anarchic Islamic, which, you know, sounds crazy when you start marrying these groups together, but an anarchic Islamic Marxist pro-revolutionary kind of worldview and they're taking up arms. They've affiliated themselves with the concept of John Brown, if you remember him.
Yeah.
So John Brown,
he was Missouri, wasn't he? Was it?
Well, he started in the Kansas Missouri border wars.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was. I mean, I consider him to be America's first homegrown terrorist. He ended up trying to start a slave revolt at Harper's Ferry, and was promptly, you know, captured and hanged, in part by the efforts of one Robert E. Lee, prior to the Civil War. And he became a rallying cry. Well, these folks have adopted John Brown and his virulent terrorist worst as a symbol, and so you'll see references to him. And again, this is all on Discord and some other social media platforms. But these groups are anti, they're anti-U.S., they're anti-male, they're anti-white, they're anti-mainstream religion, and they've been, to a certain extent, been radicalized into this violent, these violent patterns by a constant pounding from media sources and other places in the mainstream about, you know, Donald Trump is the enemy and the people affiliated with Trump are threats to democracy and da 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 da.
Well, they got a point there. It's not like there's nothing there.
Well, I consider everything that Trump is doing, and in fact, this latest thing, we talk about Jimmy Kimmel here in a minute because I want to put that in context. But that's where these guys are, and that's why you see these comments from people in the administration. And of course, another problem here, Tom, is that, you know, Charlie Kirk was not some minor figure. He was well known to most of the guys in the current administration. They liked him. They worked with him. He was a very effective organizer for votes and for getting out the vote. He provided in my opinion, a welcome conservative voice on college campuses, and he was the thing that made him so dangerous to these people who ultimately aligned to kill him, was that he was not afraid of going into the lion's den and basically sitting down and conversing. Now, he was not a violent guy or a proponent of violence. He was, you know, we got to talk. And if you let me talk, if you let me speak, then I think I can convince you of my point of view, or at least make you think about yours. And that's what he did, and he was very effective at it. And that proved to be
I think that's spectacular. You know me. What we're missing here, Lou, I think a lot of I'm not just going to say people on the right are missing, but Kevin will tell you I'm not in the middle. I'm in the middle in a way that I can observe what's happening on both sides, but in the midst of this whole mess, that's why I want to get my buddy Dr. Blade on next week. In the midst of this whole mess is this total feeling of desperation that you're absolutely powerless. And you're watching things happen, the Palestinian situation. Nobody liked the fact that Hamas came in there. Nobody likes Hamas. But they came in here and ripped up all these people and took hostages and did all these brutalities and all this stuff. Nobody likes that. I mean, I don't think there could be anybody. I don't even.
It's not a question. It's not a question of whether you like it.
I'm saying
from the Israeli perspective.
I'm saying nobody will tolerate that. Yet,
okay.
To most people, the idea that to not get the feel that Netanyahu's view of the world is and the only good Palestinian's a dead one, people have to get that feel right now because
he doesn't think that way.
I know is whatever it is, there's more and more people. Whatever it is, it's collateral damage. Whatever it is, they shouldn't have been there. He reminds me of Rumsfeld. But I'm not saying I agree with all this. What I'm saying is, every day there's more people dying. There doesn't seem to be an end to it.
Oh, there'll be an end.
Oh, okay, fine.
And they're moving.
Well, I'm not trying to argue. I'm not trying to belabor the point. What I'm saying is, I'm trying to tell you what other people think. In this area, in the last week, we had masked people break into some guy's house. It was the wrong house. They busted in the front door and the back door. Everybody's wearing masks. They went down to 87th Street, Home Depot, and collected all the people in front, Hispanics that are looking for people to hire them in the parking lot. Guess what? A bunch of them were citizens. They didn't care. I mean, if you just look around, you go, what are we doing? This is all in 8 months?
I blame Joe Biden for all of that.
Okay, well, I'm sure you do. But the point
being... I mean, this is by design. This is the way that when you... The people that opened our borders... want this to happen.
Okay, all right, whatever we want to go with this, this is not my America. Now, the point I'm trying to make is you know, there's nobody less violent than me. I went to concealed carry class, and I still can't bring myself to buy a gun. Because I saw all the rules, and said, if I'm a law-abiding guy, I can't take it anywhere. Plus, I don't want one on me anyway. Somebody's liable to bop me on the head and take it and kill somebody else. But to see how other people feel, they feel desperate. they absolutely feel desperate in a lot of ways. I mean, people, there's no church to turn to. You talk to a young guy, oh, the priest do is fiddle around with little boys. No, it's not all they do. Come on. There's this massive desperation in people aged 20 to 35. You look at the economy, they're never going to get a good job, Lou, ever. I mean, you might, some people, if you're an engineer, that's what I've been trying to push, you know, anybody who listens to the show is young, maybe getting one of those degrees, because you can still be a civil engineer and have a nice life like Bill Moriarty and people like that. But the idea, you're never going to be a trader. You're going to work for somebody else. You're going to work for some governmental agency. You're going to work for one of five companies. There's a desperation here that I've never sensed in this country before in all my years. And will some of it come out in violence? It shouldn't, but it will.
The outer limits of that desperation or frustration are what you're seeing with the Kirk shooter and the people that he surrounded himself with. And so when you ask, how do these folks get that way, this is the way. So,
well, but also it comes down, if they had a real job and a real future, in my day, Lou, if I was one of these goofballs, I wouldn't have time to be one of them. I was here at 7 in the morning. I didn't get out of here until 3:30. Went to play ball. We had a drink and was tired. I didn't have time to sit around and listen to a bunch of morons all day. These guys have nothing to do. Idle time is a devil's plaything, for God's sake?
Yeah, I don't know that that's the government's fault, but I'm saying that, you know, these guys, the shooter, probably on the spectrum, very smart, apparently very bright, just, you know, got himself, he is an adult, got himself into this world where he's listening to people who have a whole bunch of issues. And
but out of all the right wingers in the world, why pick this guy? He didn't seem like he was offensive to anybody.
Kirk?
Yeah.
Oh, they killed him. They killed him because he was highly effective. That's what I was telling you.
I'm saying why him? I mean, why not? Why not go? So grab some neo-Nazi somewhere or something if you're going to do something like that.
If you've been listening to the Democratic Party, he was a Nazi. He was a neo-Nazi. All of the people to the right of them are effectively neo-Nazis or fascists or whatever you want to call them. And so Kirk was demonized by, you know, by Chuck Schumer and you know, any number of people.
But you look at
who referred to him as you know, a racist, a demagogue, and all he was doing was going on college campuses and engaging people in debate.
But it's hard to split yourself, and this is not me talking. I'm saying, when you look at Musk. And he and Trump were attached at the hip. And all of a sudden, you read something like this. This is what the guy really thinks. And coming from South Africa, I guess I'm not all that surprised. And now, the guy who's in the White House, this guy was Stephen Miller. God, Lou, I guess you and I would say they're not all like that. But here we got a man he's got everybody's pieces of information from the country we've given this guy. We've given him $1 trillion. Now it turns out he's a white supremacist, for God's sake, which we probably all suspected in the first place. And the answer is, how many more are in that group?
Well,
how do you not ask that question?
There's a big difference between somebody who says something like this and somebody who's, you know, organizing militias. As far as I know, he's not organizing militias.
No. Wait a minute. We're going to... Let me see what the quote was.
You know, his view, as I said, he's something of a eugenicist. His view on that is frankly not a lot different than I dumped his name, the guy who was responsible for the Green Revolution back in the 1960s.
I know what you're talking about. But where he sold his millions of online followers. First, we've given the guy a social platform where he can essentially censure other people.
We've allowed him to have it.
Okay, but now he, of course, can now censure other people. That they need to fight or die.
Well, you mean like the Biden guys were doing for 4 years using the intelligence agencies and Facebook?
I wish
why I want to talk about the Kimmel thing.
We could have a very good discussion that Trump has an amazing talent of realizing when things are going the wrong way of picking up the charge and going further. I understand at this part. Well,
what COVID was.
Okay,
with the Democrats.
But
all of this, the foundation for all of this.
One thing we need to do, I think, on the show, all of us, is if we're talking about what a guy in office today and what he can do today, what somebody did 8 years ago, or what Hillary did, when Hillary gets back in office, which I don't want to see, we can fire bullets at her, or not bullets, words at her.
But to understand what's happening right now, you don't have to go back 8 years. Okay. You can go back three.
Well, you can take it back to Trump's first term.
Well,
Trump's first
term was built in large aspect on the precedents that were set under Obama.
Okay, so
in terms
first
of what executive power can do.
Every one of Trump's faults is because of Biden and Obama. Trump was Trump before those guys were alive, for God's sake.
Trump's people and the people around him. I mean, Trump says, there were certain things Trump wanted to do. He was, in my opinion, radicalized by multiple coup attempts and the weaponizing of the FBI and the CIA and several other agencies against him and his people.
So now he's going to have a private army.
He stepped around. He when he got back into power, the people around him and Trump himself looked back and said, "We are not going to allow that to happen again."
So Trump was a good guy up to look. Let's kind of get off
I'm
the
not,
Trump thing,
I'm
but,
not,
but I'm saying,
I'm not saying
we're,
good.
But I mean,
not,
I'm
not
concerned about. I'm not
on.
Concerned about him. I'm concerned about the country going forward. I got two lovely nieces. I'm worried, Lou. I'm real worried.
But if you jump up and down like the Democrats do,
okay,
and say Trump, 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 Musk, 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 you ignore what laid the groundwork for your complaints about them.
Lou,
and I'm not trying to engage in whataboutism. I'm trying to point out.
You are aware that we had a guest on the show, Pedro da Costa. You were on when he was on. He asked the wrong question. I think this was before Trump, so it had to be Obama. He asked the wrong question to Janet Yellen when she was head of the Treasury or the Fed, and he was fired by the Wall Street Journal. So I'm trying to agree with you, which is hard to do to people on the show. This has been a progression, but I don't want it to go any further.
Well, I don't want it to go further either. But what you're watching, and all of this happens within a framework of court decisions and precedents that were set under prior administrations, and a lot of what you're seeing with Trump and Pam Bondi deserved to have her rear end kicked for the comment she made about hate speech, and she did. She was roundly criticized and walked that statement back within hours.
It doesn't matter. People still heard it.
Well, they did. But I mean, she walked it back. Fortunately, it was just words
you
at that point.
You can't. That's the one major disagreement. By the way, I know I'm always kind of arguing with you guys when I say you guys, people on the show, both sides. But I agree with everybody. I do it because, but one thing I absolutely will disagree with everybody on here, because I do the show every day. This whole idea of popping one out there and taking it back, nobody hears the take back, Lou. Nobody hears the take
back. Well,
it's like printing some big article that lose the biggest bleep on earth, and 3 days later having a retraction on the back page at the bottom. I mean,
again, that has to do with how it gets spread through the.
It's what people want to believe.
She deserved to be criticized for that initial comment. The point I'm making or I want to make is when you say I don't want this to go any further, I want it to stop. You know, to a certain extent, that horse has left the barn. So now what we've got to do is come to grips with the fact that the precedent has been established for pretty much everything that Trump has been doing. And he's been winning. You know, when it finally gets to a court where you've got real judges, he's been successful for the most part. That's
real judges. You mean the Supreme Court, his guys?
Well, federal appeals courts and the Supreme Court.
But if you take that view, apply it to sports for a second, Lou. Does that mean everything that's going on now at NIL, nobody, doesn't look like anybody's going to school, that all this was is okay because somebody gave some kid 40 years ago $10 to his, go to his uncle's funeral? I mean, it, all of a sudden now it's the same thing? I mean, really?
I don't know what that means, but
I'm saying, just because it's progression here, doesn't make it right.
Well, okay, so we're getting away from legality versus into morality.
Well,
all I can say is
your buddy Jefferson said, "If there's no morality, his Constitution isn't worth crap." Right?
Well, Jefferson said the Constitution is grounded in that, but yeah. But morals change, as you and I know.
I'm not so sure they ever should, really. But okay.
Well, but they do, and so we're, you know, if you don't believe me, take a look at, well, go back to our earlier topic about homosexuality. I mean, we were putting people in jail for homosexual conduct back in the 90s. My point is this, the groundwork for this has been laid, and what you're seeing now with this president and a substantial number of his followers is the use of that groundwork to build a structure that they want and that they're in favor of.
Which is nothing what you and I want. It's nothing what you and I want.
I mean, to the extent that I don't want the FBI weaponized, that I don't want the CIA weaponized, that I don't want the military politicized.
Come to Chicago and ride in with me tomorrow morning.
I'm in favor of that.
You know, ride in with me tomorrow morning. You're the one who read the book about the taking the local police into the Gestapo. Now, yesterday morning, there was a commercial here from, what's her name? Christy Noem. $50,000 signing bonus. Pay for your college tuition or your student loan if you got it. In trying to recruit people from the Chicago police and the surrounding police to join the masked gang. What do you think of that?
I think they have to recruit people, and I would...
Why?
I think they... Pardon me?
Anybody who thinks that this group is going to stick with chasing down Hispanics and they're not going to be used for whatever Trump wants them to be used for, boy, what kind of glasses are you wearing?
They have a very limited jurisdiction.
They can traffic stops here on people who look Hispanic.
Yeah, they have a very limited jurisdiction in terms of what they can, who they can actually arrest and actually prosecute. And the short answer is that, again, what you're seeing with ICE playing out is by design from the previous administration. If you flood the country with illegals and you a subsequent administration tries to come in and clean it up, this is what happens.
Musk was an illegal.
I'm sorry?
Musk was an illegal. Everybody who's okay, we're not
is he illegal now?
Doesn't matter, he lied on it.
Does okay. Well, I don't know about that.
Sure you do.
Come on. Gentlemen, we all know that Musk came over to the United States on a student visa. And
yeah.
Then a year later started to go over to a company, and he did it illegally.
Okay.
He was not the student visa does not give him the right to work.
That's true.
Under that precedence, he violated it. But since he's a trillionaire and he's a Trump, he gets away with it.
Well,
Let me give you another example.
Well, gentlemen, wait. No, let me finish, please. If you can now pick up people because they're Hispanic looking, when does it stop?
Because you're not picking
can.
They're not picking up people because
they have
Hispanic
the right
looking.
That's what they're doing here, Lou. That's what, I don't know if you missed this.
If they're speaking Spanish or if they look Hispanic.
Okay.
So what goes next, Lou?
The Supreme?
Because
the Supreme?
I can now say, I don't like the way people with brown hair and brown eyes, I don't like them. I can now pull them over and question them.
The Supreme Court said in the opinion that they issued a couple of weeks ago that Hispanic appearance and Spanish speaking are part of a mosaic, if you will, of factors. It's the same thing they were doing with drug arrests back in the 80s. It's a factor, but it's not necessarily a determining factor. You're not looking at people and saying, okay, that guy speaks Spanish, we're going to pick him up. It's that guy speaks Spanish, he's in a place where we see a lot of illegal immigration coming, or illegal immigrants coming for work. He's in a place where he's in a car with no license plates. I mean, there's a whole bunch of factors that they use. Hispanic and Spanish speaking is one of them.
You're saying
because that's where most of the immigrants
came
from. You're
saying it's a factor. It's a factor in a lot of other things they're supposed to use. What do you think the training is on these guys?
Do you know? Have you seen the training manual?
I
don't know.
I'm saying, do you think any one of the people behind the mask, if you pull the mask off and said, "Tell me what the Supreme Court actually said," one of them could tell you that?
Oh, I'll bet you that they've been given a lot of training on that. I'm going to say that they.
Well, I'm saying they swept in and arrested guys at the Home Depot, and sure enough, half of them were citizens, and they had to walk their way out of that later.
Okay, and they let them go.
The Hispanic representative said that anybody Hispanic better start carrying their passport so they could. Is this? Remember the old movies? Your papers, please.
And this, as I said, this is by design.
Do you carry your passport so you can be? You can let them know you're a citizen.
No, I carry my military ID card, which identifies me.
There's a lot of people who came out of the military that aren't citizens.
Well, but mine identifies me with a social security number and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, I get it.
In any event, this is by design. I blame the previous administration for this. This was set up deliberately so that you would have to do this kind of a program to deal with the fact that we let 10 to 15 million people into the country.
No, we didn't.
You don't know that.
You don't know it either, though. That's the problem.
My estimate's better than yours.
Nope. Everything I've read, the people that they counted on coming in here illegally were the people they caught and sent back. There's no number, no count of the people who they didn't catch, because how would they know? They didn't catch them.
Well, the estimate, they know how many people, they have a rough estimate how many people crossed the border.
I'm saying the numbers they picked up, and this was, these are government statistics, and we can fight about statistics all I want, but I read this stuff, Lou, and sometimes I just look at it and I go, this can't be even correct, because you and I and Kevin were having this number, and everybody keeps tossing this 10 million number around. What happened somewhere in the Biden administration, and by the way, I never agreed with the open stuff for a while, I never did, that. But what
do you agree with? Do you agree with trying to fix it?
Harassing, using an excuse to harass everybody.
Do you agree
with
trying to fix the problem?
What is the problem?
Do you think it's a problem that we have millions?
Let me talk about the millions. What happened was they had a new program, and the new program was, if you catch somebody coming across the border, it's an illegal crossing. You let the guy go back. Instead of going through all the process and everything. So if the same guy came across 10 times, which a lot of them did, it's 10 guys coming in. You never could count the person you didn't catch. You're counting the people you caught and sent back.
I understand that's one theory.
But the fact that I want once in however long he's going to be in office, and probably till he dies because I don't think he wants out, once I want the man to justify a number. And everybody picks up the number like it's God, and the guy doesn't speak a word of truth anywhere. Why would you believe any number the man says?
I'm not getting the numbers from Donald Trump. I'm getting the numbers from the INS. I'm getting the numbers from Homeland Security. But let's just say, do you agree that this is something, or do you think that this is a problem that should be solved? We have millions. You would agree it's millions.
No, I don't agree. If you start counting Polish people that here never got their citizenship and things like that.
Do you agree that we have millions of people here illegally?
Okay. Let's say I do. So who are we throwing out?
Do you think that's a problem that should be solved?
No.
Okay.
People that are the drug people and came in like that, yeah. Somebody's wife who has a family, is not a citizen, has been here for 30 years, no.
All right. So for the people, for the relatively limited number of people who have established a life here over 30 years.
I don't think
years,
it's a limited number at all.
Well, it is a limited number. For a limited number of people.
How do you know that?
Because the bulk of our illegal immigration came in over the last 10 years, the millions that I'm talking about.
I have a Polish cleaning lady that her friends... They've been here for 25 years. I don't think any of them are citizens.
I don't think there's very many of those people.
I think there are. There's a whole lot of Hispanic people who have been here forever.
Relative to the numbers that came across the border since 2020, I don't think there's very many of those people. I think they're a relatively small proportion. So for the benefit of those people, you will allow millions of illegals into the country.
It's not as big enough of a problem to have your own private army to go after them with masks.
See, I think the people whose kids have been murdered or raped or killed by drunk drivers, I think those people would disagree with you.
So wait a minute, drunk drivers. For instance, what brand of car has the highest percentage of drunk driving pullover?
It doesn't matter.
A BMW. How many Hispanics drive a BMW?
It doesn't matter. I'm just looking at the numbers. I mean, from a political perspective and a public policy perspective, you have a significant number of people who are here creating criminal problems. If you're the relative of somebody who's been killed by one of these guys, then how many
people have been
getting
killed
them out
by
of the country is a pretty good option.
It's a question of. Bill Moriarty comes out and says they can't. The people down in Texas, some of their best workers are heading back, and they've been here for 10 years. It's very difficult. By the way, did you see the citizen test today?
Let me just say that this is another side effect of illegal immigration that I'm, as an employment lawyer, I'm adamant about, and that is the exploitation of these folks when they come into the United States because they can be worked. Yes, they are being exploited. Because if you have a large population of illegal workers in your area, they depress the hourly wage because they can be paid less, and they can be cheated and they can be exploited. We have a huge issue with that here, and it's ridiculous, and it's because again we didn't enforce our borders.
I can't believe how many people and brilliant people are blowing this thing so far out of proportion. It's scary.
Okay. So you and I have a fundamental disagreement, and I'm
tens of millions of people that nobody can actually save, whether they're tens of millions or not. We know there's a whole bunch of people here that aren't citizens, have been here forever, because it's very difficult to become a citizen. You see, they just changed the citizens test today, this morning. That was the big news this morning on the way in. I don't know if you heard that.
I knew they were contemplating.
Okay, so why? How is it that all these people have been here all these years? Well, how is it that all these people that have been in the Army aren't citizens? I mean, there's people who were in the Army. I was reading last week that they were told when they got in the Army they were part of their citizenship. When they got out, they said, "We lied to you." How can you be honorably discharged and not be a citizen, for God's sake?
I don't know, but I know there's a process for that, and if you don't go through the process, you don't get your green card. So I don't know what the arrangements are. I don't know enough about that program. But I do know that for a number of guys, and I met them when I was on active or in the reserves, who were serving and who had signed up to serve, and they were doing it expressly for citizenship purposes, but it wasn't automatic. They didn't get their DD-214 and suddenly become a citizen. They had to apply, and you know, and that's, I'm sorry.
It's all on them.
It is on them. If you don't go through the process, you don't get your card.
How did 5 years ago, Lou? Did you realize that these people were all your enemy and they were the source of everything wrong
they're
in this
not,
country?
They're not my enemy. They're just here illegally.
It's a good thing Trump told us this. It's a good thing he told us this. It's a good thing that way back in the day, my Jewish dentist became my enemy. I didn't know that until somebody told me that.
They're not the enemy.
Sure they are. We're hunting them down like dogs.
We're not hunting them down like
dogs. Here they are.
We are rounding them up and bringing them, you know, bringing them back and putting them out. And this is what you have to do if you want to enforce, if you blow off enforcing the borders and then come in with a mandate to try to fix the problem. And you don't believe it's a problem to be fixed. Okay, I get that.
I didn't say it wasn't a problem to be
you,
fixed.
You did.
I said it would not be one of my top 10 problems in this country.
Well, you didn't get elected on that platform. And a bunch of people, you know, millions and millions, more than half the country voted.
There are a lot of esteemed white people who want everybody out of here who isn't white. I don't agree with them.
A lot, and I don't think it's racial. I think it has nothing to do with racial. I think it has everything to do with illegality.
Oh, God. All right.
And so you didn't get elected on that platform.
All right, so the lady from the... allegedly, what came out yesterday, and I haven't driven it all the way in. Our secretary of the Treasury had two primary residences at the same time. Now we're going to throw the lady at the Federal Reserve out because she's female and black and a Democrat. We do the same thing with that for our Secretary of the Treasury.
I don't know. I don't know what the circumstances are. I know that if you go back through loan applications, you will see multiple primary residences in those loan applications because people put that down as their house, and when they move to another house, they put that down as their primary application. The problem with Cook was that she put down her primary her.
All right, so we're already saying
at the same time.
We're already saying the other guy was different. When they were at the same time.
I'm sorry?
We're saying the other guy's
two
innocent.
2 minutes over.
Yeah, I know we are.
All right, these are big issues, and how you enforce stuff, and again, what you enforce first, what you don't enforce. I would just enforce a lot of other stuff first.
Well, this goes back to the point that we've made many times before, which is the more expansive your federal law or the more expansive your laws are, the more you are at the discretion of whoever happens to be enforcing it.
Yeah, that's a problem, I think. But that's
which
I'm not. I will never say the other guys didn't set the tone. This has been coming for 25 years, Lou.
Yeah,
we know that. We agree.
I will stick to my guns that our immigration issue right now has been set up by design. So
well,
all right. We'll talk to you next week.
We let everybody in so we could throw them all out. Well, I don't know about that one, but. Well, we'll talk next week. Are you? What are you doing? Are you open for the big winter this year with the La Niña and El Niño?
It snowed up at all of the ski areas.
Wow.
2 days ago. So there's snow on the ground. There was snow on the ground up there.
Did you guys decide to sell your town to the mining company?
No. No, that's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, you don't like the mayor.
No, Cripple Creek's a nice little place, but
how could the gold the vein be right under the town? How do they know that?
No, they obviously didn't know that when they built the town.
Oh, God, so. Yeah. Anyway, right. Take care of yourself, bud. SP Futures is up 50. NASDAQ Futures up 277. We got our guys, Jimmy.
Yes, you do. Yeah,
do. Guys, what's up? How are you?
Well, we're. I had a good night's sleep because I didn't stay up last night to watch Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, I didn't have to do that. I don't know how. It's funny. Obviously Lou is just on, and everybody thinks this is all limited. And I go back to what did Hemingway say? Ask not for whom the bell tolls for thee. Everybody's convinced it's only going to make it to. It's not going to make it to me. I don't know how people all of a sudden can. I always figure if something happens to somebody else, it could happen to me. But maybe it's just me being a low class guy or something.
Well, we've got Marco Rubio now saying that, and others saying if they don't like you, they can take away your U.S. passport. Doesn't matter whether you were born here or not. They'll take away your, and then that will keep you in the United States. That was the same policy, by the way, as the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany. They pulled people's passports or didn't give them to them based on their political views, et cetera.
When we always thought, and Andrew's more the attorney, but we always thought that if something like, and this is where I was on with the other day, where I was saying, we've had these kinds of issues before. I mean, clearly we had problems in the Civil War. I mean, it was a war. I think we had same kind of problems during the Depression. I think, was it 1909 or 1908 when the economy was in the crap hole? We've had essentially challenges to our system of government all along the way. And it seems like we've weathered the storm to a certain extent. But now I don't really see. If this keeps going, unless people just get a collective sigh of relief or the market crashes or something economic, I don't see any way to head it off. I don't see how if you start recruiting all your policemen onto ICE, and you start doing things like that where you're paying people to join this army and we have no and everybody who says something against anybody, we somehow try and silence, and you got Elon Musk calling for damn near armed conflict. how does it stop? I mean, I guess Andrew, my guess would be Andrew would say, one of these days we'll all have a deep breath and we'll all just say we're not doing this anymore.
But no. What's needed is an appreciation of history that you bring to the show, but also a resolve to fight. So I'll just make one historical point. You mentioned problems in our country, serious problems, starting with the Civil War. But even though I was a history major in college, I didn't really appreciate until fairly recently that the Vice President of the United States, Aaron Burr, was a traitor, in effect. And he was trying to work with foreign powers and overthrow the government while he was Vice President under Jefferson. And they had a trial. He was ultimately acquitted, partly because they thought he wasn't a threat anymore. But you go all the way back and you see extremely serious intrigues that have been overcome because basically the public, in a sense, wants freedom. But here's the big difference and the big threat that I will conclude this journey with, is that it's far more centralized power now, because back then they were just coming off the Confederation of States, and it was very much Congress ran things, the states ran things, localities ran things, whereas now we have totally consolidated power under people like Musk, Trump, and their appointees, and they have all our records now, thanks to Musk going into Social Security and Medicare and HHS. So they have the ability to pinpoint, target dissenters, and Kimmel is just part of the process, but it was predicted that they'd go after him. Trump did it months ago when they got rid of Colbert.
Well, and he said it just last night in England. He said when they told him that Kimmel's show was canceled, he said, good, now there's only two more, Fallon and Myers.
Oh. Well, how do you, when we were talking about Lewin, obviously it sounded like we were arguing, which I guess we sort of were a little bit, but there has been somewhat of a process on this. You know, and he goes back to Biden and before that, Obama. And I will say that in the Obama administration, I think it was Obama, you guys probably know Pedro da Costa. I keep bringing his name up. He was a financial reporter. He used to come on the show maybe once a month. I haven't heard from him in a while. But he was at one of Janet Yellen's press conferences, like Powell did yesterday, and we'll talk about that. He said something. Remember when the Fed was accused of not keeping their speeches and people were front-running their speeches? And there was supposed to be an investigation, and Janet Yellen said, no, we'll handle the investigation, which is essentially said we're going to table it. Well, he asked her at one of the meetings, or at the press conferences, what is the status of your investigation? And you could see the old babe, she just stiffened. Like a grandmother who was pissed at you. She just stiffened and said she wasn't going to answer that or something. I guess immediately a call was made to the Wall Street Journal and he got canned. And so it's not like it's...
How they've fallen. Andy and I both know the guy who was the public affairs spokesman for Paul Volcker and Alan Greenspan at the Fed. And, you know, I don't think things were... we didn't know him back at when he was a spokesperson, but we got to know him afterwards, and had we known, and we would have found out everything there was going on at the Fed, at the National Press Club bar, because that's where we hung out.
Well, to go back to your what you just mentioned, Chief, you can find isolated instances, and all of us could use up the entire show and more with instances of arrogant, powerful Democrats, if we chose. And we'll just mention two words there, Rahm Emanuel. Yep. And we could go into a whole litany of situations. But what we're now looking at is far more pervasive crackdown for some of the reasons I've mentioned, but also just a chip on the shoulder that goes beyond a Janet Yellen or Rahm Emanuel to be totally pervasive, almost totally pervasive. It hasn't captured us yet, but that's the ultimate goal. And I was listening to your previous discussion. It's great radio. I didn't need my cup of coffee listening to it, but if I could identify one part of it that kind of puzzled me, to put it nicely, it's when Lou was saying they, as if they somehow killed Kirk. And that this is a concept that is now pervasive in conservative circles and justifies retribution against Kimmel and everybody else. But what's the evidence that just because somebody like Schumer criticized Kirk, that leads to his assassination?
Yeah, I don't get that at all. I mean, there seems to be an awful lot, God, of these virtually all seem to be white male in their 20s and 30s, sitting around doing God knows what during the day, armed to the teeth, seemingly pretty good at shooting, that are liable to do this to anybody on any given day. And to try and attribute that to Kimmel or me or somebody is like, where are you going with this? I mean, how does anybody know what's in this kid's mind? I mean, maybe you just want to make a name. I have no idea. How can you blame that on somebody else?
Yeah, well, you can't really. The only thing you can blame it on is this culture of retribution. Look, this what we know about this guy, Tyler Robinson, is that he was very much into the gamer community. And he was also in this Discord, on this Discord platform, with a lot of others who you could probably call involuntary celibates, incels. Can they fit in neatly into any political category? Not really, although you could say that they're more into the nihilist libertarian general category, but this guy Robinson seemed to have some affinity for a group called the Groypers, which is basically the army of Nick Fuentes. And Nick Fuentes is like the ultra-right of the far-right. But when you get that far ultra-right of the far-right, you start even getting into the ultra-left of the far-left, because it's one complete circle. And you know, in the later months, he apparently had second thoughts about the ultra right's hatred for trans people and had a friendship with one. I mean, you can't really, like I say, you can't put this into any particular political category. Although people are saying, "Oh, it's Antifa."
Well, the one we could was Timothy McVeigh. We know right where he came from. And yet we didn't go blast every compound in Idaho and Texas of far right wingers, did we?
Well, let's talk about McVeigh, because Wayne and I, among others, but we're the guests here.
All right, stop for a second to the listeners who maybe have forgotten this one. There's so many of these things, hard to forget. I mean, he's the guy who filled up the concrete truck with explosives and blew up half the building at the Oklahoma City and half of the people in there had their kids in there in the nursery and downstairs. And how many people did he kill? And he was just a right winger.
I think it was over 200.
Yeah, and he was some right winger. We didn't chase down every right winger back then.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going, because they should have. Well, not every right winger, but here's what. And Wayne's got a great memory for the details, but just to tee it up, they went after McVeigh, heavy duty, and he had a partner, Nichols, who they kind of cut a deal with, but they didn't expand the investigation further, which they should have, just to get regionally appropriate, that's a new word. The bombing was in Oklahoma City, but a kind of ground zero of a lot of it was in Michigan in various libertarian anarchist circles there. And Janet
Napolitano.
Napolitano. And Merrick Garland, who was, the Attorney General under Biden, he was one of her prosecutors, and they curtailed that investigation and just thought, well, let's just focus on McVeigh pretty much and a couple other people like Nichols. We get the evidence, we get the conviction, and we won't irritate the whole network of anti-government right-wingers. And that was a strategic mistake. They should have expanded the investigation into these circles instead of just getting their conviction and saying it's all over.
And now, they couldn't wait to kill McVeigh.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
By the way, at a spot at the National Press Club that Wayne and I often, it's an alcove over in the corner, they have a picture of McVeigh, and they've deliberately, on the newspapers, when they took his mugshot, put his number over his T-shirt, and the T-shirt is kind of a right-wing slogan, "Don't tread on me."
Think Semper Tyrannis.
Yeah, that's always to tyrants. And so the whole concept was, let's pretend that there's not a kind of anarchist, fascist, right-wing group here in the U.S. Let's just call it McVeigh.
And Sic Semper Tyrannis is what John Wilkes Booth yelled after he jumped off the balcony after killing President
Lincoln. Well, what do you
guys, Lincoln?
What, in defense of my buddy Lou, and I think he's somewhat correct, during the Biden administration, I really did feel that a lot of the censure and stuff that I always thought was going to come from the right really started to come from the left. Is this both sides doing? Is that why young people now are just so disgusted with the whole place? They see it from both sides? I mean, Trump has taken it. I'll say what, he has an amazing talent of seeing where the weaknesses are and pushing them. And that's a talent of his that I wish I had. I don't want to do it, but I mean, he's pretty aware that the censorship part. I mean, the Biden guys, Lou's right. They were doing that in his administration. Is this just something now we tolerate on a level on both sides, or what?
You can find examples, as I mentioned before, and we could use up not just the whole hour, but the whole day.
The whole weekend.
Of abuses.
Oh, no.
But here's the thing. What you don't have, and you can't show me that I don't think, what you don't have is the head of the Federal Communications Commission saying we're going to take away the licenses of and forbid mergers and other activities of broadcast stations that don't get rid of Kimmel and Colbert. And that's the immediate trigger to get rid of Kimmel. He's a comedian.
Yeah.
They make jokes. And the head of the FCC went on a right-wing blogger's show, Benny Johnson. Benny Johnson, who was getting millions of dollars from Russians. And so he's a blogger who's earning a salary like a hedge fund chief, thanks to money laundered from Russians. And Karg, the head of the FCC, goes on and says, we're going to look at the licenses of ABC affiliates, and within hours, Kimmel is out. And you cannot... I dare someone...
You're right, you cannot.
...a Democratic example.
Okay? No, you cannot. But I guess what I'm... The question I'm having trouble asking is... Last week there was a few. Wish you guys were around. We could have a drink once in a while. I was with all these.
We'll get out there.
Actually, a couple of young people, a couple other people. And we were talking over a cocktail regarding all the stuff with. You know, there's only a few companies now in a lot of the industries, and essentially all of them in the power in the Metas and the places, and they all seem to bring the briefcase to Trump, and somehow kiss his ass and they're anointed as a company going forward. I mean, you guys were so predictive on this Oracle thing, and how they're going to end up with TikTok. But you talk to people, and it's not you guys and me that kind of realize the way things kind of were and supposed to be. The answer I got was, hey, we're down to only a few companies. Why shouldn't government have a piece of them? I mean, it's not whether it's right or wrong. As we've made it to this point, you know, what's the difference? They're not independent anyway.
Here's the difference: is when we talked about Chrysler a few years ago, they were in trouble. It would have devastated a big part of the economy. It would have hurt consumers because you'd be down to two major U.S. auto companies and two is kind of a tipping point where there's almost a de facto monopoly and prices go up. You needed that third company, and so you could make a logical financial argument for government help to help Chrysler and its successors stay in the game. Whereas what we're looking at now with the briefcase analogy, you know, we're talking in inflation. The real analogy is the mob, where you bring an envelope, not a briefcase, and it's going to Trump. And so it's not the you go back and look at Godfather movies or its successors, where people are bringing the envelope to the wedding, to the Godfather. This has got nothing to do with financial policy helping consumers.
Well, without driving you guys down a religious or moral thing here, I don't know who was on the show a few weeks ago. They were talking about people getting bags of cash back in the day. By the way, in Chicago, people got bags of cash. And Lyndon Johnson allegedly got bags of cash. I think you guys told me that. But I said, you got to notice to me, there's a slight difference there, and it's not, maybe it's my Catholic upbringing, I don't know. It's if somebody took a bag of cash, it's because they were immoral and knew it was wrong and were trying to get around it. That you can somewhat deal with. But if somebody, if it's all out in the open and the guy doesn't even know it's wrong, I would rather have people that are immoral than people that are amoral. They don't even know what is right or wrong.
If it was legal to take a bag of cash, we would have had President Agnew.
Yeah, we've reached the stage where, you know, the people who, what's wrong with some guy with a lot of money like buying up the newspapers? You know, that's the question young people will ask you. They've never seen any in their lifetime. They've never seen any kind of filter on this or somebody saying no. It was like the mom that never said no on the block. Nobody ever explained to them, no, you can't just be Zuckerberg and buy the Post because they're saying something bad about you. But it appears that's the deal. And these guys have so much, I mean, last week we talked, Ellison made more money in one day. He could buy every newspaper in the country, right?
Right.
Well, also, somebody pointed out, I mean, the blogosphere has some very good people, very bad people in terms of information. But one of the good ones pointed out that after Musk got this $1 trillion incentive package, he showed his good faith by buying $1 billion worth of Tesla stock. And someone said, well, on its face, if you only tell part of the story, that looks like, boy, is Tesla board picked the right guy because he believes in his company. But as Paul Harvey out of Chicago would say, here's the rest of the story, that because Musk has 226 million followers and owns Twitter and was able to promote himself, his shares went up way more than the $1 billion he spent on it, simply because he's got 200 million followers who say, oh, if he believes in it, let's bump up.
Well, if you own if you do the math, which nobody wants to do these days, if you own $50 billion worth of stock and you spend $1 billion and you drive the price up 5%, you're ahead of the game, right?
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
But if somebody tries to point that out, it's obvious that they're not going to have any luck at ABC, CBS, or NBC's doing some of this stuff. And if you try to put it out on the web, well, Wayne can talk about how even TikTok and Facebook, well, not even, it's not even, but they're suppressing Wayne.
Oh, in recent days. Yes, I was deplatformed from all of the Meta platforms. I got rid of Facebook on my own, but they banned me from Instagram and Threads. And I had a couple hundred followers on Threads, but that doesn't matter. But thank God there's still a way to. I forgot I still had an old dormant account on X, formerly Twitter.
Oh, don't say that, Wayne.
Yeah, but it's not under my name. It's not under my name. And but I snuck on there, and I, you know, looking at Zuckerberg sitting next to Trump at dinner with that kind of frizzy hair, I said, man, if you turn him upside down, he'd make a darn good toilet brush.
On that note, I think we should go to break. SP Futures up 50. And we come back, let's talk about the Fed. And what I see is I'll just tell you what I think, and you guys tell me. SP Futures up 288. I mean, we're celebrating something here. And to me, it's obvious what we're celebrating. I'll tell that to you guys, and you guys can critique me when we come back. Be right back.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We're back.
Well, and we're back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P Futures, let me get the, are up 50. We've been up all morning. S&P Futures, NASDAQ Futures up 285. Now again, today, tomorrow, we will not have the Septembers. The Spoos, we will go to the Spizzes. which would be the SPZs. The Decembers are then front step tomorrow. But today they're both trading, and tomorrow morning the September will have an opening print, and then they gone, as Hawk Harrelson used to say. Dow futures up 233 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 250, that's 1%. The FTSE up 16, that's point, not so much there, 0.2%. CAC round up 79, that's 1%. So the FTSE is a laggard. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei 513, another 1%. This is money for nothing and the chicks for free here. Hang Seng down 363 the other way, 1.3%. Shanghai down 44. Not sure what's causing that. We may have to, I don't see why they would be upset with the Fed rate cut, but it looks like they are. Bonds unchanged, 4.08. The Bund up 1, 2.69. Oil, actually breaking away from the 63 a little bit. It's up another 35 cents, 64.40. Brent up 35 cents, 68.30. Gold, which got whacked yesterday, is down another 14 bucks today, but still over 37, 37.03. Silver up 3 cents, 42.18. If we keep more money in the system, I have to believe the stocks keep going up. The gold and silver are probably going to follow, but they've gone up so much, maybe they're already there. Foreign exchange, euro's over 1.18. That's high. It was 1.15 something a few weeks ago. British pound 1.36. It was under 1.35 a while ago, so dollar's been getting whacked a little bit here. Crypto up 1,400 bucks, 117, 168. So if you're involved in like crypto, like maybe the president, you're happy with the decision yesterday. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Okay. Well, obviously, Cubs won, and they are back in the playoffs. Well, today in Chicago at 7:32, it is approximately 62 degrees with a high of close to 81 to 88 with plenty of sunshine. Low tonight will be 67. In Phoenix, we are at 88 degrees with a high of 98 and possible thunderstorms. In regards to the White Sox loss to the Orioles, the Cubs did beat the Pirates 8-4, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 5-1. In regards to traffic right now, it is building. We have the inbound Kennedy from Montrose at 39 minutes. The outbound from Montrose is now 24. We have the inbound Edens from the Jane Byrne Interchange is at 48 minutes. The outbound from the Jane Byrne Interchange is at 43 minutes. The inbound Eisenhower from the Jane Byrne is at 56 minutes from Wolf. The outbound is from Wolf is 37 minutes. The Dan Ryan, the inbound from 95th is at 41 minutes. And the outbound on the locals is at 12 minutes. And on the Stevenson, the inbound from the Dan Ryan is at 53. And the outbound from the Dan Ryan is at 27. And Chief, before we go, we should say rip to Mr. Robert Redford.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
one of my favorites for sure.
And back to you.
You know what I'm going to have to go watch, guys? I'm going to have to go, in light of what's going on in the world, I have to go I'm going to go get the VCR. I got to rewatch 3 Days of the Condor. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I hate to tell another story about Andy and I at a drinking establishment, but we actually know the guy who movie and the book was written by him, basically.
I think I read the book, too, years and years ago.
Yeah. Andy, Jim Grady, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I also had a thing for Faye Dunaway, but I loved their Ford Bronco in the movie, that old Bronco. I love those songs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, just to encourage listeners to see the movie again, of course, Robert Redford plays a CIA analyst who gets caught up, and people are trying to kill him. He has no idea why, and he kind of kidnaps Faye Dunaway to help him escape these brutal killers. And the person who wrote it, Jim Grady, is still active. We see him twice a year at the author's dinner, which is an informal thing of freelance authors in DC. And what's two larger points about this? One is people think what a great movie, if only movies can tell us the truth. Well, that came out of a particular time, post-Watergate, where it was possible to get a movie like that out. I have increasing doubts that anything like that movie could have been made in the last 30 years because of the pressure on film studios politically. And let's remember that Ellison's son, David Ellison, you know, the parent company for a lot of these purchases of CBS News is Paramount. And so the film studios have, for most of their recent decades, been under very heavy political pressure. And last quick point, do you folks, I'm sure Wayne does, but Chief, do you remember how the movie ends?
Actually, I don't remember if they got him or not. I don't remember how it ends.
Well, here's the
That's
point.
That's why I want to watch it again.
Oh, should we?
Well, I mean, the crux of the we'll dig a minute, then I got to ask you guys about the Federal Reserve stuff. The crux of the movie is there are a group of people and they're in New York and like this place, and their job is to essentially read books that come out to see if there's actually a plot in the book, right? So of some sort of an overthrow or something, and Robert Redford read some book and he essentially filed a report that this sounded kind of sinister, right, or something. So he was his turn to buy lunch. While he was out, these guys came in and brutally murdered everybody else in the place, right?
Yeah.
And so he said, "What the hell? I better get out of here." I don't think he even knew it was his report that was the trouble. Did he?
No, he had no idea. But let me leap to the end because it's a classic. So it turns out that it was kind of people he knew, and it was a mistake. And at the very end, the guy who's the killer, the assassin, has him, and Redford thinks he's going to get killed, and the guy says, "No, you're all right. The contract is over. If I'm not paid to kill you, I'm not going to kill you.
That was nice of him.
And then he said as he's in the office of the head of that clandestine group that he just killed, it's Max von Sydow, and he takes his handkerchief out of his pocket, and he's wiping off the handle to put it in the guy's hand who he just killed, and he said, I'm just engaged in a little bit of house cleaning."
Yeah, but here's the punchline that's relevant to our first part of the show is Redford goes with one of his handlers, and he's in a taxi cab outside the New York Times, and his handler says, "Look, it's all kind of a mistake. In words to the effect, let's bygones are bygones. Just, you know, forget about it all." And Redford, plays this character who says, "Well, I've already told this story to the New York Times, and his boss is horrified." But the boss says, "Yeah, but will they print it?"
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys
got to the end of the movie.
Oh God! Well, that you guys, we've got something. The Fed thing yesterday, and I don't know. My message here to listeners and everybody. And this is just one guy who spent his whole life looking at monetary theory and reading about this kind of crap. You guys read about more interesting stuff, but I read about how these countries have done stuff, and the game never changes, and yet we have a Fed chair who never mentions money supply, never mentions any of that stuff, and we don't have anybody smart enough to ask him that question either, or maybe they get thrown out if they did. But what you saw on display yesterday is a very clear, in my mind, again, you guys can tell me I'm nuts, and you'd probably be right, but it's a very clear dichotomy between one group of people and another. And the object of the Fed is to, I think in a lot of ways, is to never get like this, but they have. We see a lot of things that are amazingly, by old standards, which doesn't mean they don't go higher, incredibly high. And it's been driven by, for 25 years now, or maybe more, it's been driven by leaking extra money into the system to where people who own stuff, especially the market this time, are going to appreciate in value. Now, last time it happened, that didn't happen because long-term interest rates went up with it, which they should, with inflationary expectations, to where somebody would say, if I can get 12 or 15% somewhere else, I'm not putting my money in the market. So the market actually went down. Now, this time when that was going to happen, the Fed went out and essentially bought up $7 trillion worth of stuff to make sure that didn't happen. So even though now you have inflation at the, you know, whatever, 3, 4% rate, 5% rate maybe over the last 20 years, and you see prices where 85% of your economy's, your population's gagging, 10 or 15 love it, absolutely love it. And yesterday what you saw is the gang from Washington, and now on top of that we have a president who's deeply involved in it. I mean, the biggest benefiters of dollars going down, more dollars in the system, meaning the value of the dollar goes down vis-a-vis everything else, the biggest benefactor of that is somebody who either owns fake currency like Bitcoin or owns assets, meaning investment properties, maybe resorts. Gee, who could that be? So, I mean, I've never seen anything kind of quite like this, but as a history of it, I mean, you see a guy like Ellison, and I've been, you know, giggling the other last couple of days that if he could go out and buy like half the football teams with what he made in one day. Well, say he does, and this I'm going with Weimar Germany. When they started doing the inflation, all the landowners paid off their mortgages with money that was worth nothing, but the contract said you paid off with X amounts of marks, where hell they were. Guys walked in with a big stack of marks. Here you go, no mortgage anymore. Well, the place fell apart. It ended up, you know, with a world war. You ended up with the country in, you know, totally disarray and wrecked. I'm going to say that the same people who paid for those places, their families still own those farms. And if all of a sudden someday this gets so big and the market falls apart, and all of a sudden we go into some deep recession here, which I don't hope, 40 years from now, Ellison's still going to own those teams. So it is a real big decision that is being made to the detriment of one hell of a lot of people. Now, you guys critique me, please, on that.
Well, it sounds like the opening line of the Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Yeah.
It's the worst of times for a heck of a lot more people. You're right.
Well, here's something that, you know, I know you like disagreement is good radio within bounds, but to a factoid that kind of helps your argument is the Treasury Secretary who's overseeing this, Scott Bessent. He's a major landowner in North Dakota through some of his holdings, and you know, how does this affect the thinking of these high officials? Now, it could be bad for them in a sense that the North Dakota farms can't export their soybeans to China anymore. So that's bad, but not just for him, but for a lot of people. But to go to your analogy of Germany, a lot of the other farmers are going to go bankrupt, and that land is going to be cheaper for the big giants.
Well, that's what we, whenever we talk about stuff, any little mess we get into, and you guys could rattle off more of them, Trump's first term in office with the tariffs, and with the, when the Chinese stopped importing the soybeans, or we stopped exporting, whatever that'll happen. Now, without going into a huge dissertation on the soybean industry, there's basically the people in the Midwest, you know, whatever. If you're in Illinois or in Iowa, you're going to have a train or a truck, and you're going to get them to a railhead, and they're going to get it, the stuff being exported is going to get on a barge, and it's going to get on the Mississippi to New Orleans, and that's where it's going to go, right? And then you have a certain basis. And you guys know what a basis is, but however many locks you're up the river, you got to take like a dime off your soybean bushel, because of the cost of transportation. However, if you go north, if you're in Minnesota, in Dakota, and you're doing soybeans, you're not getting to the Mississippi. You're going to get on the train and you're going to Seattle, and it's probably mostly for export. It isn't to say none comes this way, but most of it goes the other way, right? So all of a sudden that that business was decimated the 1 year in Trump's first term. I forget which one it was. You guys probably remember. Now, a lot of those farmers went BK. Now, somebody bought them, and now, you know, I guess the farm world has gotten better. I'm not going to blame Biden or Trump. It's just gotten better, and we've been exporting stuff, and I don't know what's happening now with that, but the farms are back up. I don't think the owners are the same. To give you an example, this is how goofy I am, guys, and that's why I think you guys like me. The night we were going to shut down COVID was the day before St. Patrick's Day, which was crazy, in 2020, correct? I went over to Ceres, I had a glass of wine. I went to Club Lago, I had a glass of wine. I went to Tripoli, and I had a glass of wine. And I said, we all know someday these things are going to come back open. Here's me hoping when it does, the same owners are still here. Just because they're back open doesn't mean everybody's okay. Right, guys?
Yeah, you know, I would just add that recently I read that J.D. Vance, I call him Shady Vance, is a major investor in a brokerage company that deals with foreclosed mortgage farms, bankrupted farms. Now, I mean, you know, he has every interest now in making sure as many farms, you know, go tango uniform as possible.
Well, this is the same question I kind of ask you guys every week. I mean, whether or not I'm consistent, but this whole idea of people dealing to this extent out of these government offices, you and I mean, I don't, none of us remember Harry Truman, but he sure as hell didn't do it. I don't think Eisenhower did it. Kennedy already had money. He didn't do it. Johnson, maybe a little. I don't think Jerry Ford ever did. Carter sure as hell didn't.
Not even Nixon.
I mean, but if maybe it's come so gradually now that we have the total right winger group my helpers here on the show or co-hosts that'll say, well, what's the problem? These guys are really very moral. Duh. But most young people go, that's what we keep talking. We're talking today. The theme is this progression. They go, what's the problem? Why can't the president still be doing stuff when everybody else gets to do it? And I'm like, wait a minute, he's the president. He's not your dad painting houses on the weekend. I mean, come on. I mean, somehow or another, we've lost the progression of this. I mean, the three of us could have this argument to young people. They look at us like where are these guys coming from? Where did that change?
Well, part of it is a lot of them are getting information in bites through social media without the context. And if people try to provide the context in school, then organized groups go after the teachers or professors. And Charlie Kirk's group was at the forefront of going after professors and teachers who provided context. Now, just quickly, I'm all for context. And so Lyndon Johnson actually made a fortune when he was in Congress and in the Senate through dubious means.
Didn't his wife have all the dough originally, though, Andrew?
No, Robert Caro, the historian, does a great job of describing that. Johnson would point, and let's use radio, which is a great example. Johnson would point to his wife and, oh, she's a great businesswoman and so forth. Well, actually, Caro documents how Johnson bought a little radio station in Texas and then pressured the FCC back then when he was in the Congress, he wasn't even a senator yet, to expand it to 10,000 watts Clear Channel, not the name of the current company Clear Channel, but just would expand its geographic scope. And then Johnson would get on the phone to advertisers and pressure them to advertise on his radio station that suddenly was worth millions of dollars because of its expanded reach. And Johnson's...
Well, if you can get a radio station that's 2,000 watt and get it bumped to 20, where it's all day, you just made yourself a fortune.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Then he appointed his wife to run it, but he was really running it. So in the interest of balance and context, I mentioned this story, but it's now pervasive, and young people don't have that history that was once fairly isolated examples. And of course, Johnson was just a congressman then, are now pervasive right from the top. And who's going to tell them? Because if you're a professor or teacher, you could be fired for...
Well, I mean, if you were born in a time when there was nothing but pollution, you'd never know any different. What's the problem?
Well, exactly. One other kind of broadcast thing. I'm trying to lighten up in my life by studying comedy. So I'm watching a lot of the Jack Benny shows from the 50s.
Wow.
Of course, he's from Waukegan. And it's funny as heck. You can watch this stuff on YouTube. And when you watch it, along with great appreciation for his whole crew and his comedy, you see these ads for Lucky Strikes.
Oh, yeah.
Lucky Strikes means fine tobacco, and people are just almost, the singing groups singing LSMFT and all this enthusiasm for cigarettes. That goes to your point.
Well, the Marlboro man, what he died was like 45 or something.
Yeah.
Maybe everybody loved the Marlboro man. I could have seen Wayne as the Marlboro man. What do you think?
I don't look too good in a cowboy hat. And now, if I were to wear one, I would be the example of all hat and no cattle, which is something I use against a lot of people from the West who fancy themselves as cowboys, including Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
He's a perfect example of all hat and no cattle.
But you know what? Some of the stuff in the writing, I know you're not supposed to talk about politically incorrect. I once in a while watch an old Amos and Andy show. I thought the writing and the acting was spectacular.
Oh, the country almost came to a stop when Amos and Andy would go on, particularly in the radio during the Depression. It was two white guys who did the voices.
Really? I didn't know that.
Well, in radio. And you can watch Amos and Andy on YouTube. In fact, I've recently done it. And in some black studies circles, there is a recognition that these were funny guys.
Yeah.
And that it's part of the culture. And so, I think there's at least a divided opinion among African-American scholars on whether it's okay to watch it, because these were incredibly talented people.
Yeah, I don't see... You know what's funny? Boy, how we wandered off on this after talking about the Fed, but the Three Stooges, I mean, if you look at comedy, it's always, in those kinds of shows, there was always three people. There was Moe, who was the control freak. As they say, the psychology of every male is embedded in the Three Stooges. There's Moe, who was a control freak, Curly was a goofball, and Larry was the guy who tried to keep it all together, right? Basically. And then you go to the Honeymooners. Ralph was a control freak, Ed Norton was a goofball, and the women essentially took over the Larry role.
Yeah, the best line in the Honeymooners is Ed Norton walks in on Ralph... And Ralph's sitting there eating dinner, and he says, "Oh, sorry, Ralph, I didn't know you were eating dinner." He says, "Oh, come on in, we got plenty of fried chicken. Alice, bring." And then old Ed says, "Oh no, Ralphie, when you work in the sewer all day long, you don't eat nothing that's finger licking good."
Well, if you look at the Amos and Andy, you had the Kingfish, who was the power knucklehead, right? Then you had Andy, who was a goofball chasing all the women, and Andy, and then Amos was a cab driver to get them all together at the end of the show, right? Same thing.
Exactly. And by the way, they all, if you look at it, they all lived in Harlem, obviously, but they were all dignified in their own way. And one scholar has pointed out that even Laurel and Hardy were always they were basically dignified. So, yeah. You know, Ali would say, how do you do? My name is Mr. Hardy, Mr. Oliver Norval Hardy, and this is my friend, Mr. Laurel. And they would proceed to be the dumbest idiots you could
have. Yeah.
But they had a certain dignity.
What was the name of the Kingfish's club?
Mystic Knights of the Sea.
Yeah. So, talk about shifting page two, as Paul Harvey would say. If the Fed continues to do this, I mean, it's a thing earlier in the week, if you guys have been on, after last Thursday, Morgan Stanley or somebody came out with this thing that said, in the last year, 85% of the population, their wages did not keep up with inflation. That doesn't mean their wealth, because if you own stock or you own a house, your wealth is up, but their wages did not keep up with inflation. Then you look at the stock market, and I have, you know, a lot of clients are doing real well, which is terrific for me. I'm sensing a rat here somewhere. I don't want this to end like 29, which is the only time in history that there was a greater separation of wealth as you see now. And yet you see margin loans are rocketing up every month. I mean, it's incredible. They went up like $50 billion a month the last 3 or 4 months. You see consumer loans. I mean, Nancy comes on and says a lot of the refis now are people who have a 3% house mortgage, but they're paying 25% on so much in their credit cards that they're going to get a 7% house loan just so they can fold the mortgage or the credit cards into that. Well, that's not healthy. I sense an awful lot of people not in the healthy range here. Young people, I don't know if you guys talk to them that much, never going to own a house, never going to own a car, don't even see their way through to that. And that's even if you don't have student loan debt. Where's the friction point? When's the day when we come in and we see the S&P's up 50 to now 38, where they'll be up 50 and all of a sudden something happens or somebody says something where they're down 400 at the end of the day, or is it never going to happen?
No, it's going to happen, I think. And Paul Krugman in his column 4 days ago said, look, the tariff inflation hasn't kicked in, but tariffs used to be 3%. And now they're averaging 17%, if you can figure it out, across the world. Some of the companies are eating that because they think, well, things like a 50% tariff, that can't exist forever. But we're stabilizing at a rate much higher than the traditional 3%. And ultimately, that's going to hit inflation. And to go to your point, it's very tough for new college graduates, who a lot of them do have debt, but they at least got expectations, because companies are not hiring, on the whole, brand new college graduates, because they got to train them, and the investment environment is very difficult for companies right now. And so these people have graduated last spring, a lot of them, and are finding themselves without a professional ladder, much less a house or marriage or so forth, but even a really decent job. And that's where it's going to kick in.
Well, I think a lot
and
of
you saw that CEO of McDonald's said that according to their statistics, people can't afford breakfast anymore.
Well, I think he's right. Two real quick things. One is, How many people, when they see NVIDIA up $4.50 there today, have any idea that's over $100 billion in market cap? I mean, but in terms of the tariff, one thing you mentioned, Andrew, that I've been beaten up since the tariffs came out, the idea that, well, some people are absorbing them, some people aren't, and they're going to try to, every single product, I did a lot of work on this in grad school, every single product is its own story. If you get penicillin, let's say India, and you're paying a buck for it, and there's a 50% tariff, so now it's a buck and a half where you got to send 50 cents to Trump and gang. But by the time it goes into Jimmy's behind at Northwestern, it's $200. Well, okay, all the markup is here, right? The tariff is a pimple on the ass of an elephant. But if you're importing, say, coffee or cola nuts from a place where you can only get them in one spot, where the markup might be 25%. So you're paying $4 for the coffee, and you're selling it for $5 or $5.50 because it's very competitive. If that $4 becomes $6, there's no way you can sell it at $4.50 or $5. The idea that we're absorbing or when we don't is almost market driven. The question is, where is the markup? If the markup's here, you can absorb it. If it's not, you can't absorb it. How can you?
Great point.
Yeah.
And every product is different. And I just get this weird feeling when I listen to Johnson talk, our alderman here, Pritzker to a certain extent, Trump and his people. Do these guys know anything, or are they just they were? I mean, this week is the big thing. We're going to put video gambling in all the saloons in Chicago. Chicago's didn't allow them. Now they do. It's going to be $60 to $100 million. Well, you just torpedoed the guys building the casino, right? Now, why do I got to go to the casino? They don't even recognize that it's a tax on people, and it's a tax on people that can least afford it. The object of government is not to find every little way of taxes to where your stupid population doesn't even realize that it's a tax on you, for God's sake. Is that the goal?
Well, the lotteries have been around in that kind of gambling since the American Revolution. And at some point, there should be a burden on the low information people to say, yeah, I'm not going to use my discretionary money on gambling, but people are going to do what they're going to do.
I've told the story a million times. I used to go take my mom to breakfast when she was alive. I wish I could do it one more time. I'd go downstairs and I'd run into this. I had one of those little coffee shops in the building. Run into this African-American guy, nice guy. He worked the streets at night. He'd make $20. This is 25 years ago. A quart of Coke, two things of Doritos, and 17 lottery tickets. And I'm going, this dude doesn't even realize he's got the highest marginal tax rate of anybody in the country.
Well, there's a certain enjoyment that gets, and if you don't have much else going on, there's a psychic benefit, like watching sports or something like that. A quick thing about gambling, though, for those of us who like to explore the mob's influence, at least back in the day, when New York really cracked down on illegal slot machines, the mob sent them down to New Orleans, where they were also illegal. But that cemented the relationship between the New York mob and the New Orleans mob. And they had slot machines all through Louisiana until maybe at least around 1970, even though theoretically they were all illegal.
Well, how would you feel if you're the guy building the casino right now?
Well, there is a major casino in downtown New Orleans.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, I think one of our former clients way back in the day totally lost his ass on some riverboat in his casino down in New Orleans a long time ago. Got to be in the 90s. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Don't get any kind of trouble. Talk at you. SP Futures up 27. We've come back. We're up 50. Now we're about half of that back. NASDAQ still up 202, however. Jimmy, nice job. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.